For our New Testament reading, we'll be reading Matthew 24, 29 to 31. It's found on page 26 of the Cokesbury Bible, in 805 of the Zondervan. And it reads as follows. Immediately after the suffering of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. The word of the Lord. Once again, I'd like to say thank you to Reverend Wade for allowing me to take part in this series on the spirituals. I'd like to thank Mr. Little and the choir for singing the spiritual that will actually be the topic of today's sermon, My Lord, What a Morning. I'd also like to thank you all who joined in the singing of that spiritual and really embraced the communal aspect of what I think the spirituals give us, right? These are the songs of the community, formed by the community, for the community. In fact, I was thinking about it this morning. The coming together of this sermon was a community event. Reverend Wade and I, after a few emails, decided on what song would lead the topic for the day. At first it was the song we sang earlier, Lift Every Voice and Sing. And I said, no, Reverend Wade, I did that 2 years ago when the men's health first invited me. Thank you for having me back. Then we thought about another song, and we said, no, that might be a Dr. Watson. That's really not a spiritual, as much as it is just a great song. And finally, we decided on My Lord, What a Morning. After which, of course, we called Mr. Little, and Reverend Wade politely asked, and Mr. Little politely agreed that we could sing it. It was an event that was formed in community, not just me, not just being told what to do, but one in which we all came together to decide what this day should look like. It reminds me of how Sunday services are not just a day when we come out and listen to someone speak, but it's an event where the community gathers together to hear from God. It is an all-encompassing event which seeks to transform the lives of those who are here and the situations that we face in the world. In essence, this is the gift that the spirituals give us. Spirituals give us a transformed view of God, a transformed view of community, and a transformed view of what our purpose is. And in fact, I struggled for a while to come up with a title for the sermon, and it was originally going to be The Gift of Black Theology, and I said, that might be a little bit too militant. And so the title of this week's sermon is The Gift That Our Ancestors Gave Us. We read before Matthew 24, 29 to 31, and it really provides a setting for this spiritual, right? My Lord, what a morning when the stars begin to fall. And in it, it pictures the day of judgment, the day that Christ comes back. As Matthew 24, 29, 31 tells us, this is a very dark day. A day in which the nations mourn, a day in which the stars fall from heaven. It describes a day that is both decreation and recreation at the same time. I think the biblical authors struggle for words to find what this day would actually look like because it's such a vivid event of a world that's being turned upside down that language struggles to contain what that means. Of course, if this was today, we'd had a movie about it. There'd been special effects. Life would have been good. We wouldn't have had to struggle for words. But Revelation 6 continues to describe this day. And look what it says. The stars of the sky fell to earth as a fig tree drops its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. The sky vanished like a scroll rolling itself up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth and the magnates and the generals and the rich and the powerful and everyone, slave and free, hid in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling on the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of the Lord, from the face of the one seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of the wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Paints a very dark picture for us. A day that starts out full of wrath and violence. That day is transformed into something new. That day becomes a day of joy and hope when all of God's elect are gathered together and brought from this one place into the next. The spirituals, especially this song, reimagines what this day looks like. My Lord, what a morning. And it's not a picture of fear and joy. It's not a day of judgment, rather, but it's a day of justice. And you have to remember that when they're writing this and they're singing these songs, they're, of course, enslaved. But our ancestors so grasped a vision of God that changed their very lives. It was a vision of a God of justice who wanted them to be free, and who was going to move heaven and earth to make sure they were set free. It was not simply just a God who was going to take them to heaven when they died, but a God who loved them even here on earth. This power of reimagining, this power of looking at something as an event as what it was and seeing it as something totally different, is the gift that they gave us. I like to compare it to jazz, right? In the sense that jazz is music, as Wynton Marsalis says, it plays within the rules of music, right? Scales are scales, everything is the same. But it pushes music to its limits, right? And it provides something that becomes something more than we ever could have imagined. The spiritual transforms this day of judgment into a day of justice, and it transforms this day of terror into a day of joy. The spiritual transforms our view of God. Look at what the spiritual says in the first verse. Oh, you will hear the trumpet sound to wake the nations underground, looking to my Lord's right hand when the stars begin to fall. In the imagination of our ancestors, this great day of judgment became a day in which justice would be done. A day, as I said before, would they be freed from the daily terror and indignities they suffered as enslaved people. To our ancestors, this day of judgment meant more than just a day of personal salvation, more than just a day of going to heaven. It meant that God was concerned with everything about them, everything with who they were. James Cone puts it like this. He says, in this imagination of our ancestors, God was transformed from a God who was simply out there to a God who was directly with the people. That Jesus was the one who saw how they suffered. Jesus was the one who saw what they went through. And Jesus was there suffering with them, going through everything that they went through together in community. This face not only transformed their view of God, but it transformed their view of community. The song, time and time again, makes mention of the nations underground. And these nations that underground are not just simply the enslaved community, but all the communities, all the people who have engaged in the struggle as community. It is white and black. All those who have graced and understood what this God of justice meant. It provides the basis for us to form new communities even today, right? That is to say that if I view God as a God of justice, then my struggle is automatically connected to all those who struggle now. It's not a struggle that's based on race. It's not a struggle that's based on one's skin color, but it's a struggle that's based on the idea that we all live in community, and our purpose in community is to be with one another. I like the way South African Bishop Desmond Tutu put it when he talked about the spirit of Mbuntu, or Mbuntu theology. It's a theology that recognizes that I exist because you are, and you exist because I am. Right? This transformed view of community is one in which our struggles connect to the struggles around the world. Our struggles connect to the struggles of those on our southern border who are separated from their families. Our struggles connect to the people of Palestine who struggle against the daily indignities of living in apartheid. Our struggles connected with those in South Africa, right, during apartheid, of this exported system of American Jim and Jane Crow that manifests itself around the world. We talk all the time about the idea of racial reconciliation. We have services about it. We meet with other churches. And as I told Reverend Wade, it is not a term that I like. I can't stand the term racial reconciliation, to be perfectly honest with you. And the reason for that is because it assumes that there's something to reconcile to, right? Marriage is reconcile, right? Hopefully I never have to go through that with my wife. We're not trying to reconcile. We're trying to stay good forever. But if we should need to reconcile, we would, right? But it provides this idea of a basis where we started out on equal footing, something went wrong, and now we're trying to get back to where we were in the beginning, right? Like friendships reconcile. You didn't give me gas money for the trip. My bad. Here's some gas money. We're back together. Racial reconciliation now is this cheap idea that we are all equal, everything is good, and we simply just need to be friends to move forward. But the gift of our ancestors that they gave us was a gift that formed a true basis for what this new community could look like. A community built on justice, right? And this was, think about it this way. This was the idea that spurred our ancestors along, right? This was the idea that led to the genesis of the Southern Freedom Movement. It was not just a community based on friendship. It was the idea of mutual justice and us doing good for each other. Jesus asked the question, this was asked this way, what is the greatest law, right? And Jesus answers, to love God and to love neighbor. That love of neighbor is the very basis for what this community looks like. It was a great rabbi, Abraham Joshua Heschel, who said that justice is what love looks like in public. Therefore, to love one's neighbor is to seek justice for them.
Amen.
And it really does provide a new way of doing that. I apologize, my printer messed up, and instead of printing on separate pages, it printed front to back. And it really did. And my wife is sitting up there telling me, Justin, do this. I'm like, that's not going to work. But this sense of community was a radical reinvention of what it meant to be human, right? Dr. Cheryl Kirk Dugan, some of you know her, some of you worked with her before, imagines, and she says that the spirituals in themselves are a community event, which are a communal exorcism of selfish individualism, right? It's this idea that we need to come together. And it casts a really radical view of what this means. Not radical in the sense of being heretical, not radical in departing from the faith, but radical in finding something that's deeper than anything we ever imagined to form communities based on. The love of God. That God sacrificed himself for us in the person of Jesus Christ. that in his death, he provided the means of which he shows us what this looks like. The radical self-giving of oneself for another. Not only then do the spirituals... See? Pages got me. I told y'all, the pages got me. This is new technology. I'm old. Not only do the spirituals give us a transformed view of community, they also give us a transformed view of purpose. I like the way that Dr. Johnny Hill, current dean of Shaw Divinity School, says it. He says, "For enslaved and colonized people, as well as those bodies gripped by the entangled beasts of patriarchy, heterosexualism, nihilism or hopelessness is what kills the will to fight. Without hope, there is no struggle. Without hope, there is no resistance. And without hope, there is no future." I struggle to imagine a more hopeless time than when our ancestors were enslaved. Daily told that their lives didn't matter through word and deed. Given instruction on Sunday that the God whom they wished to serve actually wanted them to be in those chains, wanted them to be enslaved. Howard Thurman tells a story of his grandmother, for example, who was an ex-slave, and she was blind, and every day or every other day he would go and read to his grandmother, and she would want to hear the Gospels, the Old Testament, and he would read to her. And one day he made the mistake of reading from the Apostle Paul, and she said, "In this house, we don't read the Apostle Paul." Now, as Christians today, we say, why in the world would we not want to read the Apostle Paul? We love the Apostle Paul. But for her, she did not read the Apostle Paul because that book, those set of books, were used to justify her enslavement, right? She still loved Jesus, but she didn't want to hear from Paul, right? Now, it's not Paul's fault. Of course, we all know this. It's not Paul's fault. But it's the way in which Paul was used. Hopelessness. It's a hopelessness that would have broken me. But it did not break all of our ancestors. Make no mistake about it, it broke some. Not everybody grasped his vision of this God who was with them. And some fell into despair. But for those who understood what this meant, it transformed their lives. It transformed their idea of what joy was and where they would find it. In the midst of senseless pain and suffering, they realized that God was with them. This justice-loving, community-forming God was with them. And they were able to hold on. They were able to endure. They realized that this God who loved them had also partaken in the very suffering that they had gone through. And it gave them hope. It gave them hope that one day something would be better. People always ask the question, or rather the question is always asked, where did Martin Luther King Jr. come from? Right? There's a sense in which people view him as this new figure that somehow pops on the scene, divorced from history, with this new vision of life and how it's going to work out. But he's not, right? King, yes, educated in New England and all that other good stuff, grasped this faith of his ancestors. This was a faith that carried him through, a faith that brought us all through and that still brings us through. I think about life today. The words that Dr. Hill wrote could have been placed in the 60s, but they were written in 2014. Dr. Hill, in his book Prophetic Rage, talks about the idea of a hopelessness that is destroying our communities. And it's not a hopelessness that's because of suffering, although that's part of it. It's a hopelessness because now we look at life and we wonder, what does it mean? In this postmodern time that we're in, right, this postmodern philosophy, which is negation of everything of modernity, right? Modernity, the idea that we're going to make progress through human effort, that we will move forward, that life will get better, that everything is going to work out by human effort and will, has fallen flat. It's failed. And postmodernity has replaced it. Postmodernity acknowledges the failures of our institutions, acknowledges the failures of the past and of these views, right? And it is simply a negation of anything positive. So how do we move forward from that? I'll give an example. Marriage. Right? Marriage rates are falling. People of the children of the 80s, 90s saw divorce rates being extremely high. And they've given up on the institution of marriage to a large degree, right? It simply doesn't work for them. The church has failed them in their minds. But this is not something that's new. I like to say it this way. Our ancestors were postmoderns in 1619. Since they first came here and everything around them failed. Brought over here as indentured servants at first and moved on to slaves towards the end of that time. Not towards the end of the time, but towards a little thereafter, right? 1619, 1800s. And in the midst of a society that had failed them, in the midst of a society that had given them no purpose, in the midst of a society that had given them no hope, they found renewed purpose in God. If we can give that gift that our ancestors gave us to this current generation, I wonder what would happen. I wonder what would happen if we could find ways that transformed a meaningless, hopeless, seeming existence into one of new purpose and new joy. In that day, I think the nations would hear the Christians shout. In that day, I think the nations would be awakened underground. In that day, I think we would all say, "My Lord, what a morning." Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Justin, for giving us the word this morning. My Lord, what a morning as we look for justice among all the injustices of the world. Our invitational hymn is on page 7 of our bulletin, "This Little Light of Mine." And now the doors of the church are open. Maybe there are some of you who want to give your life to Christ for the very first time. Maybe there are some of you who want to join us here at Davis Street Presbyterian Church. Or maybe there are some of you that we need to pray for to let you know that despite what you're going through, there is a God who will wake up in the morning and allow you to know that God is still on the throne despite what you're going through. If you are one of those persons, we ask you may stand as we all sing our invitational hymn.